Once upon a time, every American space launch was covered live on all the major television networks. Going into space was a big deal with a lot of risks. There are still lots of risks, so it's not quite like zipping down to the store for a dozen eggs. For one thing, the eggs don't float in the car on the way home. In space, everything floats. Ariel Waldman reminds us of this and more in a small and fun book called What's It Like in Space? Ariel Waldman is all about collaboration and science, or as she puts it, massively multiplayer science. She did work for NASA for a while and still sits on the Council for NASA Innovative Advanced Concepts. Ariel is the global director of Science Hack Day and the founder of spacehack.org, which shows visitors many ways to get involved in space exploration. Ariel Waldman, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a disarmingly simple question there in your title. What's it like in space? How many people did you put this to?
So I interviewed a dozen astronauts and also researched historical and modern interviews with astronauts.
And did the story surprise you a bit? I mean, I know you know, given your background, you know a bit about space flight already, but did some of the answers surprise you?
You know, the most surprising stuff for me was, you know, some people might call the most mundane. For me, you know, I'm used to, like everyone else, seeing space exploration portrayed as either very romanticized or very fear-inducing. But the reality is like any other human experience, it's profoundly human. So stories of embarrassment or not wanting to go to sleep or not getting any sleep because you wanted to spend the entire time looking out the window, you know, those stories, I think, are the most surprising because they're the most relatable, and you start being able to picture yourself going into space.
One of the great things you put in here is reminding us that people thought about space flight long before it happened. Johannes Kepler, you point out, centuries ago, considered what it might be like to be in space. Was he even close to the mark?
Yeah. Kepler was, you know, he really imagined a lot of great things, but he wrote what is considered one of the first works of science-based fiction. And so he was able to really think about, you know, actually what it would be like to be on the moon and be able to observe the Earth and the type of effects that would be taking place there. And so I think, you know, a lot of people think that it was actually science, but because he didn't have because it wasn't something that could be taken that seriously at that time, he said, oh, well, it's fiction, you know, but it was a really great piece of work.
You really force us to think about some things that we never think. And we get to see all the pictures of the guys floating around the International Space Station and think, okay, they're weightless, we get it. But while you're thinking about the body being weightless, at least in my case, I forgot to consider the fact that the body's contents would be weightless too. So what, for example, does that do to digestion?
You know, there's a lot of interesting things that happen with bodily fluid management in space. And, you know, one of the things that I found interesting, if not a bit gross, was the fact that, you know, most astronauts, you can't really burp in space, because if you were to actually try to burp in space, you would accidentally end up vomiting. And this is because, you know, on Earth, we have gravity assisting us to help keep the contents of our food down, and we can, you know, release gas that way. And so there's no soda in space as a result, because they don't really want to encourage anyone trying to burp in space.
Well, you know, I didn't even ask about the eating part of space, though. I didn't think to ask about that. I mean, obviously, you can't have soda in space. You're trying to reduce the – probably don't serve a lot of chili in space for obvious reasons. So what is the food generally like, food and drink? How is it consumed?
Yeah, food and drink has gotten definitely better from where it began. Certainly, many years ago in the early days of space flight, they were either cubing or tubing their food, so to speak. They were either mashing it up to make it look like baby food and then putting it in tubes, or they were making it into bite-sized cubes and coating it with either, you know, gelatin or cereal or something that would keep it contained. And it wasn't too delightful, as you can imagine. But space food today is a bit better, although, you know, you still deal with some realities, like they don't really have bread in space. They use tortillas instead. So if you want a PB&J, you're going to be eating a PB&J on a tortilla. But other factors like spicy food is a big deal in space. And this is because, again, your mucus in your body is actually floating around. And so because of it, all astronauts essentially feel like they have a stuffed up head, because essentially their noses stuffed up. And so their taste buds, as a result, are very dim. And so because of this, they love spicy food because it, you know, is one of the few things that can sort of wake up their taste buds while they feel like they have a stuffed up head.
So does somebody stop by Taco Bell and pick up some of the extra hot packets on the way to the way to the launch pad?
Yeah, essentially. But, you know, in the form of sriracha and wasabi and, you know, all forms of hot sauce. You know, shrimp cocktail in particular is a really big fan favorite in space because shrimp is one of the few foods that is able to really maintain its consistency. And also it's able, it has cocktail sauce, which has a lot of spice in it. So that's a big favorite with a number of astronauts.
So no bread in space because of crumbs or mold or a combination thereof?
It's kind of a combination, but definitely because of crumbs. You know, crumbs are something that has been a concern for NASA from the get-go. In fact, you know, there was at one point a group of astronauts who sort of snuck on board. I think it was a corned beef sandwich. And, you know, they didn't tell anyone about it. They hid it in their suit. And, you know, of course, as soon as they bit into it, it started having a bunch of, you know, crumbs falling all over the place. And, you know, obviously that's a big concern because if any of those crumbs get into any of the machinery of the spacecraft, that could create a big hazard. So NASA wasn't too happy about that contraband, and they used tortillas moving forward.
I can understand why. Ariel Waldman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She describes herself as a hacker of space exploration, and she's the author of a small book called What's It Like in Space? Stories from Astronauts Who've Been There. You can join this discussion on the Exchange. You might have some questions for Ariel about what she's seen or things you might have heard from previous astronauts. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. My starting point for thinking about this was when, I can never remember, was it Scott Kelly or Mark Kelly who just came back?
Scott Kelly.
Scott Kelly, okay. And he talked about how his clothes felt weird because your clothes float on you in space.
Yeah. Your clothes, when you're up there, obviously, are kind of floating away from you. So the good news is that you don't really have to worry about doing laundry or worry about sort of stinking up your clothes because they're kind of floating away from you at all times. But yes, when you come back to Earth, everything is just incredibly heavy, including your clothes.
Yeah, and he mentioned it irritated him. All right, so we talked about some of the body fluids already. We got to mucus and the digestive contents. Blood flow in the body, what are some of the manifestations of weightlessness there?
Yeah, that's a really weird one, and this was a story that I personally just was delighted to hear. So I sat down with an astronaut, and he told me, if you ever go into space, make sure that you go for longer than 4 days. And I was like, well, why is that? And he said it was because when you go into space, your blood floats around your entire body. Well, here on Earth, most of your blood is held below your head. But in space, that's not the case. So you go into space, and your blood is floating around your entire body. And because of this, your face actually gets bloated with blood. And so you have a very bloated face. And they refer to this as moon face. So essentially, you have moon face in space for around the first 3 or 4 days or so before your body learns how to cope with it and better distribute your blood flow. And so he said, you know, the first 4 days or so are pretty miserable while you have moon face. But after that, you get to properly enjoy your time being in space.
So the body obviously figures out ways to deal with stuff like blood flow, as you mentioned, after about 4 days. How, though, does the conscious person orient him or herself, given that there's no up or down or left or right, really?
Yeah, you have to make that decision every single time. So astronauts, when they're performing tasks aboard the space station, they consciously make a choice about what they're going to treat as up or down or right or left. And, you know, they have to also make that decision when they're even talking to each other. So they meet, you know, if they're meeting up with one of their crewmates on the space station, they have to sort of decide, well, which way are we going to talk to each other? So, yeah, it really changes your sense of direction because you get to actually choose what is up and down.
How does one move about a space station in a weightless environment?
It's Surprisingly tricky. A lot of people go up thinking that they're going to be rather graceful when they first get there, and they're like a bull in a china shop. They end up knocking everything around. A lot of astronauts claim that, you know, obviously the more experience you get at it, the more graceful you're going to look. And so you can often tell who has been up in the space station for a long time versus who's been up there for a short time by how gracefully they can get from one side to another. So I think it's sort of a form of gymnastics in its own way that, you know, the more experience you get with it, the better you'll be. But when you're first there, yeah, you're going to be knocking into stuff, knocking stuff off of walls. You'll likely be very embarrassed.
Okay, but then there's the additional issue of physics here, and for each action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, which brings us to this section of the book. I'll use your word, farts. Can you use these to move around the space station?
Yeah, so there were astronauts, and you know, there were ones I talked to, and I bet there's probably many more out there, but astronauts do a lot of funny personal experiments while they're in space, which I just love. So one of them is, you know, astronauts have admitted to actually going to the space station and farting and trying to see if their farts can propel them from one side of the space station to another. Unfortunately, spoiler alert, it turns out you can't. It's not enough force, and it doesn't push you around at all. But it was definitely a delightful thing to know that people have actually tried.
Ariel, what about other things, other bits of force coming out of the body, blowing your breath or sneezing or even flapping your arms? I mean, in the space station, do these things happen? I mean, can you move around doing these things?
Yeah. You know, not really, but that leads to some other funny experiments. For instance, there was a woman who was aboard the space station, and her crewmates, you know, because she was a bit smaller in stature, they put her in the middle, this middle part of the space station where she couldn't actually touch any of the sides, and they sort of like perfectly, you know, maneuvered her like right in the center so that she couldn't reach any sides with her arms or legs, and so then she tried flapping her arms and doing anything she could to get to one of the walls, and she couldn't touch any of them, and she couldn't propel herself to any of them. So that's the thing to always think about when you're in space is, you know, getting from one side to another, while it looks like you're floating and able to sort of swim through thin air, you actually need to, you know, have a force to, yeah, react off of. And so she wasn't able to touch any sides of the space station at all. So, you know, which, of course, you can imagine, like, her crewmates found endlessly funny. And I think after a while she was like, okay, put me back next to one of the walls.
She was stranded then between the walls.
Yes, yes.
Ariel Waldman's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's written a book asking astronauts about what it's like in space. The book is called What's It Like in Space? You can join us on the exchange with your questions, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So obviously lots to go on during the waking hours. Now, when it's time to sleep, since you're in space orbiting the Earth and you have day-night cycles, I assume, occurring more frequently than on the surface of the Earth, how do they even decide what's day and night, what's sleepy time and what's wakey time on the space station?
Yeah, so mission control scripts astronaut stays meticulously, and so every minute of every day is scheduled, and so their sleep time is scheduled, and they're in sync with mission control, so they kind of, you know, they set a time, everyone agrees on the time, and they keep to that. But there were definitely stories of, astronauts who, like Anousheh Ansari, she went up there. She was a privately funded astronaut, and she did not agree to her, you know, scheduled sleep time. She wanted to look out the window the entire time, and this got to the point where she was up there for a few days, and she wasn't sleeping really hardly at all because she was just wanting to look out the window the entire time. And so actually by the time she needed to come back to Earth, she was falling asleep and unable to keep her eyes open while they were trying to prepare to go back to Earth. And her crewmates were a bit alarmed at it, but, you know, it ended up being okay in the end. But, she rejected the sleep time.
So when it is time to go to sleep, though, it's not like you can go lie down because there's no down. So how do you get yourself confined in a way in which, particularly when you have clothes float on you, certainly the bed covers would do that, too.
Yeah, so a lot of astronauts will tether themselves inside of a sleeping bag, but some others don't do that. And the ones who haven't, some of them have woken up to quite the surprise because if you don't, you know, put your entire body inside of a sleeping bag, some astronauts have woken up and scared themselves silly because they woke up and there was this hand dangling in front of their face, like right in front of their face, and they didn't know whose hand it was. It was their own hand, and this is something that, you know, even astronauts haven't really thought about. Like, if you are not inside a sleeping bag, your hands are going to be floating around while you're sleeping, and you might wake up to your own hand being right in front of your face.
So, and I understand astronauts have backward dreams. Backward, what are backward dreams?
Yeah, so astronauts, while they're in space, not all of them, but some of them have reported that they have backwards dreams, where they have dreams that they're back on Earth and everything is normal on Earth except for gravity. And so they're having dreams that they're on Earth, but gravity is a bit off, or gravity is a bit like it is in space. And so they have these incredibly surreal sort of dreams.
Wow. And do those dreams stick with them once they're back on the ground?
So when they get back on the ground, a different sort of effect has happened to some people where, you know, they'll be sleeping and they'll wake up from sleeping. And so this won't even be dreaming. This will just be when they first wake up, they'll actually think that they're floating in their bedroom and that they're seeing their dresser from above and seeing all their furniture sort of floating around as if they were, you know, sort of floating above their bedroom. So it takes them a while to reorient when they're back on Earth.
Wow, it really does change your perception in big, big ways.
Let's
talk about the Garn scale. Recognize the name instantly when Senator Jake Garn from Utah went up on the space shuttle in 1985, I guess it was. this is really a scale of space sickness. Is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah. So Jake Garn went into space, and, you know, actually most astronauts get sick while they're in space, which made me feel like so much better because I would definitely get very sick. But Garn specifically got so utterly sick and was just throwing up so much, like so much more than the normal person, that to this day there's sort of an informal Garn scale, and one unit of Garn is like the most sick any human being can ever get in space. So he made himself famous for being the most sick person in space, and so yeah, there's units of Garn of essentially assessing how sick you are.
It's like I'm a tenth of a Garn or a fifth of a Garn or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
is Jake Garn around anymore to appreciate what his name became?
I think he is, but I personally haven't actually talked to him about it. This was based on some historical interviews, because as you said, it took place quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm curious what his thoughts are on it.
So given space sickness and some of the other stuff, well, you mentioned what is the most valuable possession an astronaut can take into space. What is that?
It is a towel, which, really is just wonderful because, yeah, it's completely true with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that, you know, the most useful thing you can have is a towel. In space, that's definitely true because, as we've talked about, there is so much bodily fluid management that you're dealing with in space. And so having a towel with you at all times for whatever you're dealing with is really useful, and you'll begin feeling a lot smarter as long as you take a towel with you wherever you go.
Okay, the physical aspects aside, I have to believe that there could be some severe disorientation. I mean, given that there's no particular up or down, that you can't put your feet on the ground because there's no ground. You know, you can't lie down someplace because there's no down. So, I mean, do people's minds come a little unhinged in space? I mean, what do they have to do to make sure that they stay focused on task and be able to function as human beings?
Yeah, I think really the thing that was nice to hear was it's different for everyone, and it's great to hear that because we're so used to, I guess, the historical perspective of space flight where, you know, you had military men going and, you know, so it was this very, you know, oh, they can deal with everything. But as more and more people slowly but surely have been in space, everyone is different, and that's wonderful. So for some people, being in space for a long time is really where they feel relaxed and they get to treat it as if they're at home and they get to really contemplate, you know, their situation and really just unwind. That said, other people said that, you know, being in space for a long time really wasn't for them. A lot of the romanticism wore off, and yeah, they had to focus a lot on their mood day to day and make sure that they didn't really lose track of of managing their mood because they said it was significantly harder for them to be in space for such a long time. So it really depends on the person, which to me is good because, you know, we all have our own battles to fight. And so I think that applies to space as well.
Ariel, you mentioned the backwards dreams and then coming back to Earth and thinking that they're floating in the bedroom. I mean, it seems like being weightless for a long time would certainly, I mean, that we talked about the physical effects or have talked about the physical effects in society generally, that your muscles have a pretty hard time readjusting to gravity. But what are some of the other things that astronauts have found when they come back to Earth and some of their expectations of being weightless are no longer valid?
Yeah, there's, you know, the common thing that happens to pretty much every astronaut is when they come back home, they'll drop things, whether, you know, they'll drop a plate on the ground or they'll drop their toothpaste, you know, forgetting to actually have to put things down is a big deal. And this applies also to, like, you know, someone says, hey, toss me that pen. You know, a lot of times they'll just toss the pen and it'll just go a few inches and they forget like how much energy and effort is needed just to like throw something across the room at someone. So, yeah, it's pretty funny when they come back. There's a lot of things they forget.
Yeah, the idea of letting go in things in the middle of space and thinking they'll just stay there is that's immediately undone. Curious about emotional stuff. Do they get depressed or notice some real mood and attitude changes once they're back in Earth and gravity?
I think, you know, when you come back to Earth, you know, much like being in space, while maybe not every minute of every hour for you is scripted, you do have to focus on, you know, regaining your muscle mass and regaining, you know, your strength. And so I think you're really focused a lot on your health, and ultimately that's going to help your mood as well. And so I think a regimented thing on health when you come back to Earth just helps people's moods a lot.
Okay, we hope to hear about you going up on a space flight sometime soon. Ariel Waldman talked to 12 astronauts for her book, What's It Like in Space? Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, take care.